With Gondor increasingly hemmed in, the Rohirrim emerge as a new ally in the struggle against the forces of Mordor, and Sauron is entrusted with Isengard. However, all is not well in the north, as great dragons descend upon the settlements of the dwarves, and a long and deadly winter descends. Join us as we continue our discussion of Middle-earth's Third Age. The Tolkien Road, Episode 207, The Lord of the Rings, History of the Third Age, Part 5. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tolkien Road Podcast, Episode 207, The History of the Third Age, Part 5.
Five.
That's right.
Wow.
Greta, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Rocking and rolling.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
cool.
It's good to rock and roll.
That's all
always.
I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to rock and roll all night and party every day.
Don't we all?
Mm-hmm.
Don't we all?
Yeah. So, thanks for joining in, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
We have a very exciting topic as we continue on our journey through Middle-earth's Third Age with this episode. We're already on part five, and we got a few more parts to come. It's just packed. It's packed with all kinds of interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is going to be a good episode. Talking about things like the fall of Erebor, the coming of dragons, the coming of Sauron to Isengard, other things. So
The rise of Rohan.
So,
I love me those horse people.
Yeah, the horse people.
The horse people.
Everybody loves the horse people.
Yeah, it's not to love.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, hey, before we get started, we have some business to take care of. And first and foremost, we always want to give a shout out to our patrons, to our Tolkien Road Podcast patrons. Thank you so much, you guys. You
mm-hmm.
all rock, and
totally.
you keep this journey going.
Mm-hmm.
We want to give a shout out to our newest patrons. This time we have Johanna T as our newest patron.
Hey, thanks, Johanna.
Yeah, so very excited to have you with us, Johanna.
Mm-hmm.
We also want to give a shout out to Joey S, who is a current patron who boosted his pledge.
Oh,
yeah,
that's awesome. I didn't know you could do that.
That's some serious rock and roll right there.
Whenever you boost anything,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
in the
serious.
In the words of Emeril Lagasse, he kicked it up a notch.
Bam.
That's right.
Thank you, Joey.
Yeah, thank you, Joey. And thank you, Johanna, for your new pledge. And I want to encourage everyone out there, if you're not already a patron, to head on over to Tolkien Road or to patreon.com/Tolkien Road and find out all of the details, right, about becoming a patron, all of the cool things. When you become a patron, you support the show in a tangible way, and that lands you some awesome perks, like early access to new episodes and more. So head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out all of the deets. Sound good, Greta?
Yeah.
That's right.
Sounds awesome.
All right. And then if you're unable to support us via Patreon, you can also support us in the following ways. You can leave us a one-time tip via tip jar. You can go to the Tolkien Road website, tolkienroad.com, and look for one of the more recent episodes, and you'll see a leave a tip button there. So it should be a nice blue button that says leave a tip. You can also subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Always good first steps to take, and other podcasting platforms, right? So subscribe, rate, and review. All three of those things are very important. Leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. We love those 5-star ratings, and we really love it when you say nice things about us.
Mm-hmm.
Because A, it's great to hear from people. It's great to hear, you know, the positive feedback from folks. And B, iTunes and all the other podcast platforms like that, right? They like to see people interacting, right, with the show in various ways, and it helps them know that they need to give a boost to this show. Hey, here's our latest 5-star rating that says, "Great Tolkien Podcast."
Oh,
they say, "I thoroughly enjoy this podcast on the works of the great Tolkien. The hosts do not present themselves as know-it-alls, just two students of Tolkien that want to exchange knowledge. I will be listening to all of the podcasts in the future. Highly recommended."
Woohoo!
Right. Well, thank
That's
you very
awesome.
Much. Yeah, thank you very much for that comment. So, it's good to hear. It's good to hear that we don't come off as know-it-alls. You know,
yes.
That's definitely not something I want to come off as on the show. So,
yeah.
And I personally find that more enjoyable when I'm listening to someone who's more of a more of a student, like, who's knowledgeable, but
right,
but who considers himself a student and isn't like, I know everything about this, so let me tell you about it, right?
Right.
So, yeah. Cool. I appreciate that comment.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, still not a whole lot new in the world of Tolkien news. We're all continuing to wait with bated breath for more from Latron Prime on the Amazon Lord of the Rings TV series. I did see something, some news floating around in the last couple of days about an interview with Hugo Weaving, who, of course, played Elrond in the Peter Jackson films,
okay.
Right?
Yep.
And he was asked about, would you want to return as Elrond, right, for the Lord of the Rings Amazon TV series?
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said, no, I'm done. Right, I'm done playing Elrond.
I can't blame him.
You know, I think it's time for some fresh blood in all those roles, right?
Yeah, I agree.
I understand the desire to want to maybe make it continuous with the Peter Jackson films, but I personally am a fan of maybe just starting fresh, right? Starting mm-hmm. fresh. Like, to me, those films have their place and they're really enjoyable, and I'm really glad they exist, but I kind of want to see what Amazon does with this show themselves, right? Like, mm-hmm. and starting afresh. I can understand maybe using some of the I think Jackson's films nailed it with the visual language, right? In a lot of ways. So I hope there's some continuity with that. But, you know, I think we need, you know, I wouldn't want to see Cate Blanchett playing Galadriel again. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that Hugo Weaving said this, and I think that makes a lot of sense than wanting to be like, well, I want to come back in and continue being this role. I own this role or something like that. No, I think it's time for somebody else to take it over.
I totally agree.
So?
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, maybe in two or three decades, we'll have like 15 different people who have played Elrond, like we have 15 different people who have played Batman and Spider-Man now.
Right,
so.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, we all have our favorites, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I hope it's not 15 people. I hope you get a little more... standard, but you know, I mean, it'd be great if whoever ends up playing Elrond on this Lord of the Rings Latron Prime show, if they end up playing Elrond for a long time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I hope whatever Amazon is doing exists for a long time, for many seasons,
yeah,
right?
It's successful, yeah.
So, for correspondence, stick around to the end of the episode, and I think we're ready to get rolling.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sweet. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. On this episode, we're discussing the events spanning Third Age 2480 through Third Age 2770. In this period, with Gondor in continued decline, we witness the birth of Rohan as one of their key allies, as well as the growth of Hobbit civilization. So, sound good?
Sounds fantastic.
Wonderful. All right, so picking up where we left off, we of course, 2480, circa 2480 is where we left off with what I'm calling Sauron's Misty Mountain strategy, trying to use the Misty Mountains to divide the west from the east and so make each probably easier to conquer. 2509, Celebrion, journeying to Lorien, is waylaid in the Redhorn Pass and receives a poisoned wound. So, Greta, do you know who Celebrion is?
The name is vaguely familiar.
Or Celebrion, I guess I should say, because of where the accent is.
I feel like I get him mixed up with Círdan.
Well, he is a she.
Oh,
so.
Well, bad on me.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I don't know who she is.
Celebrion is the daughter of Celeborn and Galadriel and the wife of Elrond and the mother of Arwen.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, how about that?
Yeah, so... In 2509 here, she is journeying to Lorien, and so this is, of course, coming after she would be journeying over the Misty Mountains with the Redhorn Pass, and she receives a poisoned wound.
Do we know from who?
I believe by the orcs. It says she was waylaid by orcs of the Misty Mountains and the Redhorn Pass of the Misty Mountains. She was captured and tormented, receiving a poisoned wound. She was rescued, but she never fully recovered in mind or spirit and no longer wished to stay in Middle-earth. So that's why she's not around in Lord of the Rings. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep.
It's funny, I never wondered about that, though.
Yeah, it never really comes up, does it?
No, like I just kind of accept, like, as no, Elrond's a single dad. Okay. Yeah. Like, it just, you know, like, it never really bothered me, which is weird. Anyway.
Well, there you go.
Now I know.
All right. Then, after that, we... So, actually, starting in the year that Celebrion leaves, in 2510, orcs and Easterlings overrun Kalinarthon, right? So, Kalinarthon is this region where... let me make sure I get this right. So, this is the region to, like, in the northern part of Gondor, where Rohan will eventually be. Actually, I'm going to double check that and make sure I've got my geography right. But we hear about this because this is where the Rohirrim are going to settle, right? Kalinarthon.
Oh, okay.
So Kalinarthon was a wide green landscape in the north of Gondor, part of Anorian, right? So can we see Anorian on my little background map here? Yeah, there we go.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Anorian
there
right
okay.
there. Yeah, so this is... Yeah, it's just, it's like the southernmost, the southeasternmost region of what we, you know, what on the map is broadly called Rohan.
Mm-hmm.
And so back in this time, it wasn't yet called Rohan, I'd assume, or maybe it was, and that's where they got their name. Regardless, it's overrun, I guess, by orcs and, where did my spot go? I'm going back and forth between a couple of screens here, so bear with me, folks. Yeah, so... orcs and Easterlings overrun Kalinarthon. Yorl the Young wins the victory of the Field of Celebrant, and the Rohirrim settle in Kalinarthon. Right? So, I think
so even though it's overrun, they fight them off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and they settle there.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so we covered a lot of about the history of the Rohirrim when we discussed Appendix A a few years back in episode 139.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can go back and listen to that if you want to do more of a deep dive on the history of Rohan. Like we said in the last episode, we'll probably... end up doing a series on Rohan at some point, on the Rohirrim and the history of the Rohirrim and all those sorts of things. And then there's a whole chapter in Unfinished Tales that pertains to all of this that we haven't looked at. So, but this is, I guess you could call 2510 like the official beginning of the Rohirrim, right? As the Rohirrim, as the people settled in that part of Gondor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That makes sense. Cool.
And this people that allies themselves with Gondor as well.
Yep.
So, 2545, Yorl falls in the battle in the Wold, right? So the leader, Yorl the Young, falls in 2545.
Oh, the Rohirrim.
Right.
Leader. Yeah.
And then 2569, Brego, son of Yorl, completes the Golden Hall. 2570, Baldur, son of Brego, enters the Forbidden Door and is lost. So you'll remember when, leading up to the, when they make the journey through the paths of the dead,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right under the White Mountains
in the Lord of the Rings,
in the Lord of the Rings,
yeah.
right? There's that figure they find just mm-hmm. sitting there, and
right.
that is this. They, it's, you know, we kind of learned
Baldur.
Some about that. I remember learning mm-hmm. some about Baldur at
yes,
that time.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then in the same year, 2570, dragons reappear in the far north and begin to afflict the dwarves. Right. So, dun dun dun.
Man.
Yeah.
Poor dwarves.
Dragons. Dragons coming at you. All right, 2589, Dain the First slain by a dragon. And then 2590, Thror returns to Erebor. Gror, his brother, goes to the Iron Hills.
And these, again, are all... these are all ancestors of Thorin,
yes.
Oakenshield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then a little interesting note, 2670, Tobold plants pipeweed in the South Farthing, I believe.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Like, of all these super dramatic events about dragons slaying dwarves and, you know, orcs overrunning Rohan, that they take time to mention the planting of pipeweed.
Right. Well, that's where the name... Tobold is where, as I believe, where the name Old Toby comes from, which is one of, you know, the famous versions of pipeweed, right? You know, that was one of their favorite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was
I
it Old Toby? So,
yeah.
So I guess that's why that's particularly significant there.
So Tobold is actually a person.
Yeah.
Or a hobbit, maybe?
Yeah, that's where the Old Toby got its name.
Got it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, this little interesting note. How old Toby came by the plant is not recorded, for to his dying day he would not tell.
It was a secret.
Yes.
How funny.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A little suspicious as well.
Quite suspicious.
I wonder. Yes, maybe he created it himself.
Maybe.
Maybe he was magical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the entire victory of the War of the Ring is thanks in some part to old Toby. Maybe that's why this is in here.
That's not too far-fetched, I don't think.
Yeah.
Do not underestimate the power of pipeweed, people.
I don't.
I never do.
You accusing me of underestimating
it? No, I said people as in like...
other people.
Everyone
mm-hmm.
in the world, which I guess includes us, but...
yeah.
That's a good reminder.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. 2683, Isengrim II becomes 10th Thane and begins the excavation of Great Smeals. Great Smeals. What is that? Great Great Smeals.
Right? It's like it should be an exclamation.
Right. So the Great Smeals, again, thanks to Tolkien Gateway for this info. The Great Smeals was the ancestral home and many-tunneled mansion of the Took family. It was located in the town of Tookboro in the west farthing of the Shire.
Tookboro.
So I guess it was basically a hobbit hole mansion.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah. It does sound pretty cool.
I wonder why they named it that.
What is a smeal? Let's see if there's any...
Great smeals.
Philological notes here. No, I don't see
it
any.
It sounds like something that Doc would say.
Oh, from
Back to the Future?
Yeah.
Great smeals.
Let's see. Well, I'm looking it up. I Googled it, but all the references are to... let's see. So smeals were hobbit holes tunneled into earth, mounds, and hills.
Oh, okay.
Oh, here we go. Etymology. That's the term I was looking for. The word smeal is an invention of Tolkien based on the Old English word smiggle. Smiggle. Interesting. Smeal is a translation of the hobbitish word tren, rohirric trehan, burrow. Tolkien explained in his guide to the names in The Lord of the Rings the origin of the name smeggle and the lemma on smeals. Smeals, a word peculiar to hobbits, not common speech, meaning burrow, leaving it leave unchanged. It is a farm that the Old English word smiggle, burrow, might have had if it had survived. It's a form, I'm sorry, that the Old English word smiggle, burrow, might have had if it had survived. The same element appears in Gollum's real name, smeggle.
So smeggle meant burrow.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, considering that he lives underground.
Yeah,
out of the light.
Definitely, and he liked to like kind of spend time in the dirt. I think mm-hmm. that's one of the things about him, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool.
So Smeals means burrow, just simply means burrow. And,
so a great smeal would be a great burrow or a fancy hobbit hole.
Also an interesting note here, Smaug and Smeagol are etymologically related, which makes sense because Smaug liked to live under the mountain, right?
Yes. Yes. Very good.
Smaug was a burrower in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, even if he just went and stole other people's burrows.
He was a burrower and a hoarder.
Yes.
Yeah. A hoardish burrower.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Very good.
All right. So, let's see. 2683. Then 2698, Ecthelion I rebuilds the White Tower in Minas Tirith. All right, so Ecthelion I, again, he is not a king. He is a steward. He's a ruling steward of Gondor because the kings of Gondor ceased mm-hmm. with Yarendur, right? Yarnur in 2050.
Right.
Right, so for the last... how many years is it? So that was 2050 that Yarnur was slain. And then this is 2698. So for over 500 years now, the stewards have been in charge of Gondor, right? No kings, just stewards. So.
And Minas Tirith, that's the Tower of the Sun.
That is the,
right.
Well, Minas Anor was the Tower of the Sun. But when Minas Ithil fell, Minas Ithil was the Tower of the Moon, and then Minas Anor was the Tower of the Sun, right? They were kind of on opposite sides of, you know... One, I guess, you know, was on, you know... We could get into that naming convention another time. But then after... I believe after Minas Ithil fell, then it became Minas Morgul, they renamed it to Minas Tirith, right?
But it was originally Minas Anor.
It was originally Minas Anor, which is Tower of the Sun.
Gotcha.
Minas Tirith means Tower of the Guard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm. So, and then that White Tower, right? So there's that White Tower, of course, that sits atop Minas Tirith, mm-hmm. the beautiful White Tower, mm-hmm. And then Ecthelion rebuilt it. Apparently, it existed before, and maybe had fallen into some disrepair. And it was afterwards known as the Tower of Ecthelion. I believe it's known as that in Lord. It's actually called that maybe a couple of times in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
That's where the Palantir was, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where they kept the Palantir.
One of the Palantirs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Palantir of Minas Anor, the Palantir of Minas Tirith. And yeah, you can see pretty far. It says the tower had its eye upon many lands. It was because of this tower that the city was later named Minas Tirith. So it was 300 feet tall, by the way.
Dang.
Yeah, pretty tall. But I think sitting above, you know, the... Maybe, I'm not sure if that's with reference to like ground level or if that's with reference to the rest, like to where it starts, right? But yeah.
And this is where Aragorn ends up being crowned, right?
I'm not sure if it happens in the tower or not.
But it's in Gondor, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, it's in Minas Tirith.
Right. Okay, but the tower is in Minas Tirith.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because I remember that they did a really good job with that in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It just looked absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
In the movie.
Yeah, definitely. So, the history. So, the White Tower was first built by King Kalametar in the Third Age 1900 to house the Honor Stone and the Royal Throne. In Third Age 2698, the tower was repaired and rebuilt by the steward Ecthelion the First, for whom the tower came to be named. So it doesn't really say exactly what happened to it, why it needed to be rebuilt. I guess it just fell into disrepair, right? You know.
Yeah, it tends to happen.
Yeah.
To things when they get old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed it does.
Unfortunately.
All right. So next up we have... 2740,
orcs.
Yes. Orcs renew their invasion of Eriador, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's the Lonely Mountain.
No.
No.
That's Erebor.
Boom.
Yeah, I can see why you'd mix that up. But Eriador is the region, is basically the region to the west of the Misty Mountains, right? This whole area.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so orcs are... yeah, that's what we get right there, right? Orcs renew their invasion over there, I'm assuming from the Misty Mountains mostly. And of course now there isn't a Gondorian kingdom in this part, or a Numenorean kingdom in this part to protect the peoples that live here. So this is sounding like it's going to be pretty bad. And this is where the next entry comes in. Bandabrus Took defeats an orc band in the North Farthing, right? So I'm guessing these weren't huge armies, but they were more like just little invading bands, like little... little rogue bands of orcs and that kind of thing. They were just kind of wreaking havoc on any pockets of civilization. But Bandabrus is the formal name of Bulroar, right? So Bulroar Took, it's that one with the funny reference that funny historical reference in The Hobbit that refers to him inventing the game of golf when he like knocked off the head of the goblin king,
right? Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, this is that's who we're talking about with Bandabrus Took, right? He was, and then when we did the history of The Hobbit, when we read those lost chapters, it got mm-hmm. a little bit more into that and talked about how we found out that, like, for example, Thorin like knew stories of Bandabrus Took, right? And you know, and maybe thought to himself like, you know, how does this Bilbo, who's a descendant of Bandabrus, match up to him, right? Or it was that reference to Bilbo's mother, right? That we talked about a little bit, and we kind of pieced it together that maybe the reference was made because he had Baggins on one side, but then he had Bandabrus Took on the other. You know, he had Bulroar Took on the other side, who was this warrior.
Yes, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So Bandabrus was famous for averting a goblin invasion of the Shire at the Battle of Greenfields of Third Age 2747 and personally slaying the goblin's leader, Gulfimbul, right?
And that's how he invented Gulf. Because he killed Gulfimbul.
That's
perfect.
Right. That's right.
That's so great. So what does it say about him? Oh, that he defeated the orcs.
Right. Yeah, he defeated an orc band in the North Farthing.
Okay. Is the North Farthing that part of the Shire?
The North Farthing is, yes, indeed, part of the Shire.
Okay.
It is the north part of the Shire, I believe.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Not the south
part. Is it the far north part of the Shire?
Maybe. I don't know. Far from where? North.
Far from a thing. Is it far north of a thing?
North far thing. North far thing.
Hey, that was clever. Give me credit.
The North Farthing was the cold northern farthing of the Shire.
There we go.
The North Farthing is the only one of the four farthings that doesn't end in the three farthing stone. Its southernmost point lay about 11 miles north of it, and along its northern border were the high north moors. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
It was so far north that it was away from all the things.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed. All right. So next we've got 2758. Rohan attacked from west and east and overrun. Gondor attacked by fleets of the Corsairs.
Corsairs?
They're like a type of ship. And they're the... Yeah, they're like a type of like warship.
But
don't you remember...
Don't
you remember in Lord of the Rings with the Corsairs of Umbar?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, pirates.
Right.
Yes, okay. So they're bad guys.
Yeah, they're attacking Gondor, so you'd assume they would be bad guys.
But they're not orcs or goblins or anything.
No, they're men of the south, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah, men of, with whom Gondor had been at war for for centuries at this point, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Helm of Rohan takes refuge in Helm's Deep, and Wolf seizes Edoras. And we talked about that whole thing with the story behind where Helm's Deep came from and Wolf seizing Edoras. We talked about that again on episode 139. You know, it goes and went into some detail on it, so you can go back and check that out.
Can you remind me who Wolf is?
He was like a bad guy.
Random bad guy.
Well, not a random bad guy. I mean, he was like a... The history of Rohan in this period is pretty like... It's full of intrigue and, you know, it's honestly seemed a little barbaric. I remember when we read about it, you know, it's like a lot of battling for power, almost Games of Thrones-ish. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Game of Thrones-ish. Even though neither you and I have ever watched Games of Thrones.
Get it right, Carswell.
Games of Thrones. Yeah.
Gosh.
So, Wolf was a young nobleman who dwelt in the western borderlands of Rohan. He was the son of Freyka, and it was said that their family had had a measure of Dunlendish blood.
Okay.
So, in the year Third Age 2758, with Rohan's armies drawn into the east to repel an attack there, Wolf and his allies invaded from the west. They devastated Helm's forces at the Fords of Isen and overran the country and took Edoras, where Wolf killed Prince Haleth. He sat in the Golden Hall and claimed the kingship of Rohan. The exiled King Helm was driven into hiding in the mountains. During the long winter, Wolf's armies besieged him at Hornburg and Helm's nephew, Freyjolf, at Dunhoro. Helm and his second son died of the cold. In the spring, Helm was avenged by Freyjolf, who led a small party into Edoras and killed King Wolf in Third Age 2759. With help from Gondor, Freyjolf cleared Wolf's followers from Rohan and succeeded his uncle Helm to become its 10th rightful king. So...
Okay.
Yeah, so he was almost like a pretender to the throne of Rohan, I guess you could say.
Gotcha. Right?
So that's Wolf. Now, the long winter, all right? So mm-hmm. 2758 to 2759, we have this. The long winter follows. So what was the long winter? Well, the long winter was an extremely cold and long-lasting winter in Middle-earth covering Eriador, Dunland, and Rohan. So a large swath of land... You know, we get, just this, basically all of this region to the west of the Misty Mountains, as well as Rohan, and then Dunland as well. So, which is, you know, this region, a smaller region here to the west of the Misty Mountains. Mm-hmm. So, let's see, during this period, The winter came as cold and great snows from the north and the east. It lasted for 5 months. There was misery and death in Eriador and Rohan, but it affected less the region of Gondor south of the White Mountains. So
I feel like this is mentioned.
It might be
in the Lord of the Rings.
It wasn't as familiar to me when I was reading about this, but it might be mentioned there.
I mean, just in passing, I feel like it's mentioned. But
Gandalf during this period comes to the aid of the Shire folk, which is an interesting little note there. So maybe the beginning of a solid relationship between Gandalf and the hobbits at that point. So,
and we're still pretty far out from the events of the Hobbit and.
Lord of
the Rings. That relationship between Gandalf and the Shire was pretty well established by the time the Hobbit happened.
Yeah, so the Hobbit happens in 2941, so this is a little less than 200 years out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
From that, so.
Well, I just like knowing that because it can kind of feel like if you don't realize that, Gandalf just kind of like showing up at Bilbo's door and, you know, in the Shire can seem kind of like random.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is he all of a sudden decided he needs this hobbit from the Shire? But if you realize that there's been a relationship there for 200 years, it shows you how well acquainted the Shire folk and Gandalf would have been with each other. So it just makes sense.
Yeah.
That he would pick out Bilbo for that mission.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, apparently the reason, like the way this long winter kind of factors in a pivotal fashion is that it's connected to the next bullet with 2759, right? So you get the death of Helm, of course, after whom Helm's Deep is named, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you have what we already talked about, Freyjolf driving out Wolf and begins the second line of Kings of the Mark. And then you have Saruman takes up his abode in Isengard, right? So this is when Saruman finally, comes to Isengard itself. And remember, Isengard is that place that is in, it's to the northwest. It's that gap of Rohan, right? Isengard is kind of positioned right there, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
The note here on Tolkien Gateway says Gondor began to recover its former power after the long winter, but it wasn't so easy for Rohan. In 2758, the steward, Baron, gave the keys to Orthanc to the wizard Saruman, hoping that he would help the Rohirrim. So Saruman was given the keys to this tower, which was a Gondorian tower, in order to kind of like be the guy, in order to take up his abode there and help the Rohirrim recover, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Saruman was almost like their caretaker. I guess the Rohirrim really took a big hit during this time. And it makes sense. Like, they went through they were going through a civil war, and then they had this really bad winter, right? So, it was a bad time for the people of Rohan, and unfortunately, the wrong wizard was put in charge of them,
mm-hmm.
right after
mm-hmm.
that, right?
Or was put there
to oversee him, oversee yeah. them. So
now this is not the Baron of Beren and Lúthien, correct?
Definitely not.
Okay,
this is way after that, right? 6,000 years. That's the first age. Yeah.
Yep.
These names all repeat, though, right? In these later ages, they often name their, children after these old figures, right?
I mean, as we do to this day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we see the dwarves do that,
mm-hmm.
As we do to this day, indeed. So, all right. Saruman comes to Isengard. Just a little bit more about Isengard here. Isengard means Iron Fortress, and it is positioned right there in the Gap of Rohan, and it actually dates back to the Second Age, so it must have been built between 3320 and 3430 of the Second Age. It is Numenorean, so that's why we conjecture that it was built during those times. So again, this place that we maybe think of as not such a good place, like Dol Guldur, well, it turns out it was originally built for a good purpose. And of course, mm-hmm. a Palantir was there as well, because it was a Gondor, it was a Numenorean tower.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like all the other towers. It was, there was a Palantir there that was meant to be, so that the peoples of Numenor could communicate more
right.
easily amongst themselves.
Right. right. Yeah.
But it was originally, but was eventually used for evil purpose.
And it's not something that he fought to overtake. I mean, he was literally given given it, correct?
Right. He was given it.
That's the tower that he was given the keys to by Baron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So
if only Baron had known.
Well, they all thought that Saruman was a good guy at that point.
Yep. He was very good at putting on a show.
Indeed. All right. 2770. Smaug the dragon descends into Erebor. Dale destroyed. Thror escapes with Thrain the second and Thorin the second. All right. So yeah, Smaug comes, and there's a whole history of the war between the dwarves and the dragons that I think would be a really interesting one to get into.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that there were indeed because Smaug is sometimes referred to as a fire drake, but apparently there are cold drakes as well.
Oh.
Where they don't breathe fire, but they still, maybe they breathe like really cold
like
air
ice.
Or something like that.
Icy air.
So, and there's a lot of other, I think, things that could be said about that topic. So, but this is the year 2770 when Smaug descends, and expels the dwarves from Erebor. So, you know, when we finally get around to the Hobbit in 2941, mm-hmm. it's been 170 years.
Since this has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the attack of Smaug that we see in The Hobbit was not the first.
No.
Nope.
Not at all.
Thanks, Smaug.
Yeah, so it says Thror escapes with Thrain the second and Thorin the second. So those are the actual Thrain, and that's the actual Thorin Oakenshield that we were talking about before. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thror
is his grandfather. Thrain is Thorin's father.
Right. And Thorin the second is Thorin Oakenshield.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Cool.
All right. Yeah. So with Smaug's coming to Erebor, the dwarves are without a home and will struggle to find their place in the world. So next time we'll take a closer look at their struggle as well as the struggles of Rohan and the coming of Aragorn. Sound good?
That sounds amazing.
Fantastic.
Yes.
All right. Correspondence time.
Woo-hoo.
Ready for some correspondence, Greta?
You know it.
I am too.
Perfect.
All right. Well, our first piece of correspondence this week comes from a Facebook post. So this is from Craig B. on Facebook. Craig, in responding to our most recent episode, episode 206, said, "Recently found you guys on Spotify, and I'm absolutely hooked. Fantastic couple and love the podcast. Thanks again. I'm from Bonnie, Scotland."
Oh, I love that.
When he said I'm from Bonnie, Scotland, I thought to myself, I just read his comment in the wrong accent. Yeah, wrong accent.
Mm-hmm.
So
you did,
but you know,
I think you need to do it again.
I'll butcher it. I'll butcher it, and I wouldn't.
As would I.
As someone with Scottish roots, long back Scottish roots, I wouldn't want to butcher a Scottish accent.
No.
So
it's too pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Craig, thank you. Thank you for the awesome comment.
Thank you.
And please do keep in touch. All right. Next up is from Jaden K. Jaden K. So, Jaden says, "Hi, John. I was," and I assume this is also directed at Greta as well.
Of course.
So,
yeah.
"I was listening to the very beginning of your podcast talking about the Silmarillion and the downfall of Melkor. In it, you said Melkor was imprisoned by the Valar for 3 ages, but you questioned how long that actually was. An age was an epoch of the Valar used before the rising of the sun and the moon. I did some research, and an age is 1,000 Valian years, which according to Tolkien's most recent estimates is about 144 solar years, which means that, if you do the math, Melkor was imprisoned for 432,000 years. Hope this helps."
Wow.
Interesting.
That's kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah, you know, so thank you, Jaden. It's great hearing from you. So I will say this. I looked up this question of an age, like how long is an age? And Jaden, I'd be interested to hear your source for that info, because I'm looking at, when I go to Tolkien Gateway, which is like kind of my frequent source when I want to, you know, a quick reference something with Tolkien, I looked up Valian years, and it said a Valian year is a reference to the passage of time in Valinor before the two trees were destroyed by Melkor and Ungoliant. Valian years ended with the rising of the sun during the First Age. There are approximately 9.582 solar years in a Valian year and 14,325 solar years in the years of the trees. So I haven't really... So, I mean, let's just round that up and say 10 solar years and one Valian year. And I think you said 144 solar years in a Valian year. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's maybe, and the thing is, on the Tolkien Gateway article, there aren't any references either. So it feels like there's different sources out there. Maybe they're guesses, maybe they're sources, but I'm interested in yours, Jaden, because you do a good job of tying it back to something Tolkien most recently said. So I'd love it if you'd share that source with us. Maybe it would be great to find out more about that. And you know, I could even see this being kind of maybe an episode, right, of talking about what is, you know, how do we reckon time before the first age, right, or before the coming of the sun and the moon, right?
Yeah.
In Middle Earth, because obviously there's a lot of time that happens before that, and it's not always clear how long those time periods are. So bottom line is, it sounds like Melkor was in prison for a long time.
A very long time.
Yeah. So interesting stuff. I think the next letter we're going to look at from Tim D. So if memory serves, this is on a similar time topic. Let's see here. Tim D. says, I enjoyed your time reference that David became king of Israel about 3,000 years ago, equivalent to the beginning of the Third Age viewed from The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. Here's another interesting time reference. Cleopatra the VII, Philopator, 69 BC to 10 or 12 August 30 BC, was the last active ruler of the Ptolemaic kingdom of Egypt before Egypt became a province of the Roman Empire. She was closer in time to us in AD 2020 than to the construction of the Great Pyramid of Giza. It was built circa 2580 to 2560 BC during the Fourth Dynasty of the Old Kingdom. Wow, that's pretty interesting.
That's really interesting. It kind of makes my head spin a little.
Yeah, with all these like long time periods, it's really crazy to think that like somebody who seems as ancient as Cleopatra is actually closer in time to us than she was to the construction of the Great Pyramids.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So he says, another cool time reference, the Great Pyramid of Giza was the tallest building in the world from 2560 BC to AD 1311, when it was surpassed by the Lincoln Cathedral in England. That's 3,871 years.
Wow. And I think they built that before the dawn of modern machinery.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I think, I like looking up things on Google Maps, like to, you know, to kind of see them like real world, like from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I ever get it, like, I don't really have like a strong desire to go to Egypt, except maybe like if I had a chance to just fly over there for like a 24 hours, like quick trip, just to go see the pyramids and the Sphinx, the Sphinxes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like to me, seeing those things would just be surreal.
Absolutely.
You know, like they're so iconic and they're so mysterious.
They are. You know? And like I know they exist because clearly like there's pictures of them and people have seen them in person. But part of me is kind of like, I won't believe it till I see it.
I know.
Because it's just like, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you can think of all like the cool buildings in the world and everything. And you're like, well, you know, we've seen like, you know, lots of cool buildings. We've both been to big cities and you've been to Rome and, you know, you've been to like the Vatican and seen, you know, St. Peter's. And, you know, I've certainly been to some big cities and, you know, seen some iconic places and that kind of thing. And so you think about all these other places around the world and it's not too like, it's just like, okay, that's cool. Every place has its like big iconic things.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the pyramids just seem like they're so mysterious and like, where do these things come from? How are they built?
Yeah.
Right. It really does feel like it's not
real.
Not real, not human. Yeah.
Right.
You know, not real in the same way.
Like of another world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so awesome comment, Tim. So really two really cool comments on the, topic of of history and of the length of, you know, just the vast lengths of time that Middle Earth went through in these first Third Ages and before. But I think it'd be a really cool topic at some point to look into that Valian year thing and see, you know, how long that actually is, if we can actually discover it. But, you know, maybe Jaden can solve that question for us by giving us the reference to, if Tolkien said his last reference was saying it was this long, then, you know, maybe that's our best guess.
I think
on
that's
it.
What we need to go by.
Yeah.
If we have it from the professor directly, I mean.
Yeah, definitely. So Jaden, hit us up again, please, if you can provide that reference. All right. And thanks, Tim. Thank you both,
yes,
Jaden and Tim,
you
for your
guys.
Comments. And then our last correspondence for the day comes from Marilyn, the librarian, the writer of epic letters, epic correspondence to us.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome.
We'll never officially get caught up on all the amazing correspondence that Marilyn has sent us. She's a machine.
It's amazing. She's amazing.
She is. Yeah. So this one comes to us from, this is in response to our first episode on the Third Age. So back on August 11th, Marilyn wrote, "Hello, Carswells. I enjoyed your opening Third Age episode. There will most definitely be a lot to discuss there. Regarding elves and children, elves by choice don't have children in times of danger or turmoil. As far as one can tell, that excludes much of the Third Age to begin with. And, as you nicely pointed out, they were beginning to fade and knew it, so why have more children at that point? Moreover, how would a long line of descendants establish themselves if all their ancestors are also living? Unless killed, all the kings and queens will remain alive, so the princes will always be princes, like Legolas. If one is into ruling a people or a realm, one must establish it independent of one's own land and people, as did Galadriel and Celeborn." I like how she put that, as far as like, if one's into ruling a people or a realm, it's just like, yeah, I think I kind of like being a ruler.
Yeah, this is my thing.
To me, Galadriel's got to be she's got to have some people. She's just very queen-like.
She needs some subordinates.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, totally.
She's just got the feel of like, she's wise and she needs to be in charge of some people, you know, for their good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe for the good of the rest of the world too.
And for her own good.
And for her own good as well.
Yeah.
Marilyn continues, "I think that hobbits are Eru's hidden agents, even as the Istari were openly agents, at least openly to those in Valinor. The hobbits were a manifestation of the some other will at work when Bilbo found the ring and later when Frodo freely accepted the burden, to their own very great cost and eventual healing. I'm reminded of a remark of St. Teresa of Avila during a time of trials. She wrote that she asked God why he was allowing herself and her sisters to undergo such suffering, and that he responded, 'It is even thus that I treat my friends.' To which she replied, 'Ah, Lord, it is also on that account that thou hast so few.'"
One of my favorite Teresa of Avila quotes.
Yeah, that's definitely one of our favorites. Mm-hmm. I think I know I've shared that with a few people over the years myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just being a great comment. I think shared it with our kids a few weeks ago.
I think we were talking, having a dinner table conversation and it came up. So, yeah.
It's great. Great sense of humor.
Yeah, totally.
A little bit of a dark sense of humor, but you know, but being able to, like, in the midst of suffering, have that kind of sense of humor, whatever suffering Teresa was undergoing at that. I feel like the context I've heard in was that she was in a storm or something like that.
She was in a storm, was thrown from her horse, and like landed in a big puddle of mud or something like that. But
she had a bad day.
Yep. He was having a very bad day. Right. I love it, too, that she, like, didn't even think twice about, like, burning God, you know, be like, that explains why you have so few friends.
I feel like having been a Christian for a long time, like, and like increasingly, like, this is how I dialogue with God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, Lord, what the heck?
Yeah.
Right? Like, okay, yeah. I get it. Like, I get, you know, and I trust you, but I'm just kind of like, really? Like, mm-hmm. You know, when something like out of the blue just kind of goes wrong, I'm just kind of like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what he wants from us. You know, I mean, that's how you would talk to your friends. That's how you would talk to your, you know.
It's true.
To people that you feel close to, that you can truly be yourself with.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like true friendship, like, if a person was just all sunshine and happiness with you all the time, you would feel a little like, what are you hiding from me?
Right. Right.
You know, and of course, you can't hide anything from God, right? So, you know, you kind of learn that, like, true friendship involves that being, like, kind of sharing how one honestly feels in a situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, anyway.
We digress.
Marilyn's got more to say.
Yes.
By the way, Gandalf is Manwë's Maia and Radagast is Yavanna's. Saruman was... So here's my thing there, Marilyn. So I remember from reading... of the Istari, that Yvonne, I feel like Yvonne and Gandalf had a special relationship. I couldn't remember it saying that that Gandalf was Manwë's Maia, but not doubting it necessarily. And maybe I just don't remember it from reading of the Istari from Unfinished Tales, or maybe the reference is somewhere else. But I do remember something about Yvonne, like, that Gandalf maybe having being close to the heart of Yovana. So anyway, she goes on. Were you going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, then it makes sense with Yovana being, you know, the Valar who, you know, is really into the earth and growing things, right? And Radagast has an affinity for animals and nature and things like that. So I feel like it makes sense.
Yeah. Saruman was pretty ticked with Yovana when she asked him to take Radagast along, as we see by his low opinion of the lover of animals and birds from Lord of the Rings. Also, Saruman was jealous of Gandalf because Galadriel had wanted Gandalf to head the council, and he refused, saying he wanted to be tied to no allegiance. So Saruman was a second best, not a position that would be likely to please him. Yeah, Saruman doesn't seem like, yeah, I want to be the kind of guy that wants to be second best. I also don't believe Gandalf would tell Saruman the disposition of the elven rings, because only the bearers knew who they were, and Gandalf didn't trust Saruman. Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps Galadriel and Elrond told Saruman about their rings. It's a bit of a vague point. So, yeah, Marilyn, my question on that paragraph would be, it would be great if maybe all that stuff is contained in Of the Istari. It may be in other sources, too, that I'm not familiar with. But anyway, I mean, I'll, you know, take your word for it, but it'd be great to know where some of that, like, mm-hmm. the reference for some of that, some of those ideas that you threw out there. And then she goes on and finishes, I really liked Greg's letter and his idea that Frodo tapped into the ring when he repelled Gollum. Even more, I think this is one of only two times we see Frodo using domination, which is what the ring is all about and what it looks for in possible bearers. The other time is when they are hiding outside the gates into Mordor, and Gollum is begging them not to go in that way. He slips up by suggesting the hobbits just go away and give the ring to poor Smeagol. I love the accurate predictions that go along with both of Frodo's rejections. At the gates, the precious mastered, note the word choice, you long ago. If I, wearing it, were to command you, you would obey, even if it were to leap from a precipice or to cast yourself into the fire. And such would be my command. Then on Mount Doom, and the voice coming from the wheel of fire that Sam seemed to see at Frodo's breast, be gone and trouble me no more. If you touch me ever again, you will be cast yourself into the fire of doom. And that is precisely what happens. So, yeah, so this is, and this is, of course, in response to a letter we read recently from Greg. And Greg had talked about, like, how Frodo has to tap into the power of the ring when he repels Gollum. So that's mm-hmm. what Marilyn is responding to here.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Always such great stuff.
Always good stuff.
I'm just still kind of in awe that she has, you know, that she has latched onto our podcast and cares enough to share her knowledge with us.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like an I'm not worthy,
I know, there's,
kind of attitude.
There's so much, it's always humbling in the sense that I find out there's so much I still don't know, right?
Yeah.
And
oh, I know.
But that's the joy of what we do here,
totally.
Right?
Totally. Like, absolutely.
With
we are not know-it-alls.
With everybody who writes in. And you know, we learn new stuff all the time from your correspondence. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's... Because
it's really a community of sharing knowledge, which
because
is awesome.
Because we only have three main books, mm-hmm. like, it can sometimes feel like the material is limited,
mm-hmm.
but really there's just so much in those. There's just so much packed into those three main books that, you know, there's a ton to discuss and a ton of, like, connections that you may not see after,
yeah.
even several reads.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well. Thanks so much, everybody, for your correspondence.
Yes, thank you, guys.
We'd love to hear from each and every one of you, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com. You can also go through the website. There's contact forms on the website, leaving comments on the website, Facebook, Twitter, etc. And then on the next episode, we're going to look at the history of Middle-earth, continue with the Third Age, 2770 through 2941, which that leads into the events of The Hobbit.
Yes.
So.
Good stuff.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. All right. Special thanks again to our patrons, and especially the following: Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric S.
Joey S.
Eric B.
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
Matt L.
And Johanna T.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all so much, and we will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.